Hello, I'm Victoria.
And I'm Johnny.
Welcome to Tasty Pages,
a podcast for people who love cookbooks, food, and cooking.
Each week, we'll discuss a featured cookbook from our popular Cooking the Books Instagram page.
We'll also discuss the dishes that we made and rank the book in a variety of categories,
including food photography and styling, degree of difficulty, and of course, taste.
The conversation is always unscripted, unedited, and uncensored. Spoiler alert, Victoria likes to swear.
All of this takes place in our living room in the heart of Minneapolis.
Oh yeah, we also have a featured show topic with contributions from our listeners, and we end each episode with a lame food-related joke.
Usually very lame.
Hey now.
Join us for Tasty Pages.
This week's featured cookbook is
The Weekday Vegetarians by Jenny Rosenstrach. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, Victoria.
How are you?
I am well now that I changed shirts. I had this, I put on this shirt earlier and the neck was kind of tight. It felt like a really weak person was strangling me.
What shirt was it?
It was this black shirt. I'm getting rid of it. I'm donating it because I didn't like it. I had it on for like 2 seconds. And then I said, nope.
Okay, so I just wasn't being unobservant.
No, not at all. You didn't even see it. And you won't see it.
I was like, I'm a bad wife.
It's going to the donate pile.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm all good.
All right.
I don't feel like someone's strangling me now.
Good to know.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm good.
All right. You had an eyebrow waxing mishap. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes, I had a beauty related injury today. So I... couple times a month, I dye my eyebrows dark because as I've gotten older, my hair has gotten darker, but my eyebrows have not. So they are invisible. So I will usually dye my eyebrows and wax them. And I had, I don't know, some kind of mishap with the wax and I tore a bit of skin off.
Whoa.
And I mean, it doesn't look as bad as it did earlier. It's not quite as red. But before it looked like I burned my eye with a curling iron.
Kind of.
Yeah. But
that's a harrowing story. You're brave. And you live to tell about it.
I sure did.
I'm thankful that you're okay.
And my eyebrows look really good right now.
They do. They're on point. All right. Well, welcome to Tasty Pages, episode 52, a podcast from Cooking the Books. If you go to our website, which is wecookbooks.com, there's a store tab you can click on that will bring you to our amazon.com affiliate page. And from there, we've got a few fun lists, one being kitchen essentials for home cooks, another being the favorite cookbooks that we've featured on our Instagram feed, and then a new one, fun food finds, which I will try and update and add a few more things to.
Have you added anything to it recently?
Recently since I started it.
Okay. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah. We'll get it built up
all right
over time. But if you make a purchase from any of those lists, you'll get something cool and exciting. And we'll get something cool and exciting, a few pennies from Amazon.
Woo!
Yep. And it won't cost you anything more. And it's a great way that you can show your support for what we're doing here. You want to talk about what we're in the progress of doing? It hasn't changed since last week. Spoiler
nope.
alert!
If you listen to last podcast, we're working on two books.
Yep.
Zoe's Ghana Kitchen by Zoe Adjanya, and also Malibu Farm Sunrise to Sunset by Helene Henderson.
Yeah.
And
that leads us into what we're having for dinner tonight.
Tonight we are having a smoked fish stew from Zoe's Ghana Kitchen.
Yeah, which I'm really excited about.
I know.
Wow. We've been eating some good food this week.
Oh, we
some of it's kind of off brand and not something that we're featuring in the old Instagram, but
yeah.
we've had some good experience, some good food experiences.
Let's talk about it a little.
Okay. You want to start with date night?
Yes.
Okay, so this date night, we try and do this like once a week and just reconnect. And we got all dressed up and we clean up well. Mm-hmm. I had on my velvet jacket. You had on this like hot dress.
His jacket is beautiful.
Yeah. And so we had read about two places that were, it just happened to be like right next to each other mm-hmm. in a suburb of St. Paul. And one was kind of a speakeasy-ish kind of bar, glamorous. At least this is the way they pitch it on their Instagram page. It looks very sexy
it
from the
sure
photos.
It sure does.
We show up. What they don't tell you is that this place is kind of tucked away in the back of this sports bar that serves like burgers and beer. And,
yeah.
And, you know, we show up. They say, do you have a reservation? We were like, oh, it's just this little like speakeasy bar. We didn't know we needed a reservation, especially out in the suburbs. And, you know,
although,
so our fault.
That,
our
yeah,
fault,
that is
you know,
on
fair
us.
Fair play. They said, you can sit outside on the patio. We've got some heaters going.
It was like 40 degrees yes. out. No.
So that was not happening. Mm-mm. There were some brave souls out there.
Yeah.
Plus, if we had ordered food,
it would have been cold yeah. in a heartbeat.
Yeah. So we said, no thanks to the patio. And they said, well, we've got, you know, some bar stool seating that is first come, first serve. So you're welcome to kind of, you know, keep an eye on that and roll the dice with that. So we were like, okay, cool. We'll sit here in the sports bar, choke down a drink, and see if something opens up. Unfortunately,
nothing did.
No, these people were camped out and they weren't moving.
I wouldn't blame them.
I know this was just like poor planning on our part.
And there was someone playing live music back there, and it sounded very nice too.
So we had a drink, and in the meantime, kind of looked up other alternative options on our phone because the place next door that we were originally going to eat at. It was weird. There was like no one in there. I don't know if
And it turned out to be more of like a deli type place. Like, I think its website didn't really accurately portray what
Neither
it was.
Neither one of these did.
No.
And so we were, you know, frantically resourced. We were getting kind of hangry at this point too. So not only are we waiting for, you know, potentially something to open up at the bar, but then we're getting, you know, increasingly more hangry. So I found a place that mm-hmm. sounded promising mm-hmm. that was nearby in St. Paul, and it was kind of billed as like this neighborhood bar and kind of cozy and stuff. And so we decided to just abort this trip in the suburbs. And
but you were very smart. You called ahead first and asked like what the seating situation was.
I said, hey, I know you guys are closing in about an hour and a half. We're going to swing by and grab a little nosh. How busy are you? And they were like, oh, you know, we've got some stuff opened up at the bar. You know, shouldn't be a problem. So we said, okay, we're on our way. And it was like 10, 15 minutes away. So we raced over there and had like a completely lovely meal. Oh. That was really better than it needed to be for a neighborhood bar.
Yeah. Well, the atmosphere was lovely. The room was lovely. I had this really great spicy vodka martini.
Yep.
What did you have again?
I had a Manhattan.
That's right. You
or
did.
An old-fashioned.
Yes.
I'm sorry, an old-fashioned.
And it was delicious.
Yeah.
And Johnny got the walleye.
I did.
Hey, John and Rue, you want some walleye?
Welcome to Minnesota. Have some walleye. So it was basically like a fish and chips dish, but the fish was walleye.
Yeah.
So it was like breaded fish with some fries, and it was lovely.
And
we got these like, they were billed as like Korean fries, but it was basically like French fries with like a spicy Asian dipping sauce kind of thing.
Yeah, like a kimchi sauce.
Yeah.
So date night was saved.
I was
so happy that we went there.
I was so enjoying being there with you in your company.
Oh, you
we were all dressed up because like at this other place, the sports bar, you were like, I wasted a look for this. which was not untrue.
I sound like such a snot, but you know, like if I get dressed up, you know, I'm dressed up.
I mean, I guess I'd rather be the best dressed person in a place than overdressed.
Underdressed,
I'm sorry.
I agree.
And everyone else in that place was underdressed.
Yeah.
They looked like they just rolled out of bed.
I mean, they were dressed appropriately for what it was.
For watching sports.
Yeah. I mean, since COVID, like now whenever I get a chance to dress up, you know I'm going to do it, so...
So we saved the evening. We salvaged mm-hmm. the evening. It was lovely. And kudos to this place. It was called Stewart's, and it was on Cleveland Avenue in St. Paul. So if you find yourself in the Twin Cities, can't recommend it highly enough.
Yes.
A nice little neighborhood bar that was kind of tucked away in like a garden level of this vintage apartment building. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those places where I'm sure they get like a whole stream of regulars coming in and out of there.
Yes.
And like we said, the cocktails and the food were like way better than they needed to be.
Service was great.
Yeah.
Everyone that worked there was really friendly.
So.
And they had, for the ladies, they had like, they had a stash of tampons in the bathroom and a stain stick.
Oh, stain stick. You're crazy about the stain stick.
I live and die by the stain stick.
Yep.
We have multiple.
Especially living with me. You gotta have them.
We have multiple stain sticks around the house.
Gotta have them ready.
Yes.
I think we've said all we need to say about that evening.
Yeah.
I had a great spicy chicken banh mi from United Noodles this week.
Yes.
That was when I had to do some errands and stuff, and so I grabbed that for a lunch, and it was delicious. It hit the spot.
I didn't get to have any.
We had a favorite banh mi spot in Chicago that we would frequent, and so I was kind of pleasantly surprised to find this and revisit our beloved banh mi.
Next time we go there, I will have to get a banh mi.
Yes. Highly recommended.
Let's talk about last night.
Yeah.
So as we've said before, we live above this, like, it's kind of like an international food hall. There's a barbecue place there called Soul to Soul. And we went there one time before. And we were there literally like 2 minutes before closing.
Yeah.
But we're not the only assholes that were there. There were like two other people that came up.
There were a
up.
Few people that showed up right at the wire.
Yeah. I mean, I hate being one of those people.
Yes.
And we were. And it wasn't great, you know, yeah. And I don't blame them. It was the end of the night. Everything's been around all day long, you know, whatever.
They were probably ready to get out of there.
Yes.
And then us bozos show up and want some food. And
yes,
they were not super excited to see us. They weren't like overtly rude or
no.
anything, but they
I
they weren't
get
excited
it.
Either.
I get it 100%.
Yep. Yeah.
So we have my brother-in-law, Johnny's brother,
yep.
and his wife and their two kids came over to our place for the first time to come and see it. And so we went down to the food court to get some food, which is a great option when you have like little kids who are picky, you know, everybody can get what they want.
Yes.
And we ended up getting wings from there because we were planning on making dinner. We were going to have tonight's dinner last night.
Yeah, that was our original plan. Was like, we'll just have a little light nosh, and then we'll come up here later after they've left, and we'll make our planned smoked fish stew,
mm-hmm.
which we're having tonight. Very excited about. So I said, how about I just get a few like smoked chicken wings from this barbecue joint, and we'll split those, and it'll be a nice little light nosh late in the afternoon. To our surprise, these were not chicken wings. They were like 747 wings.
Oh, my God. They were so gigantic. They were huge.
And I got six of them.
They
good
were
God.
Delicious.
Yes.
I ate like two of them and I was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
They
were gigantic.
They were phenomenal. They were so good.
I mean, smoked chicken wings.
Yeah. And
say no more.
And let's see. Your brother got, they ordered food from there too. I think they got like rib tips and brisket, and then they got some corn,
yeah.
corn on the cob.
And they seemed to enjoy it.
Yes. And then one of the owners came over just to like check in and see if we enjoyed our food. And we talked about barbecue, and he actually brought out a little sample of mac and cheese for one of the girls.
Yeah.
And it got the thumbs up because she only eats like mac and cheese from the box.
Typical kid snob.
Yeah,
when it comes
yeah.
to mac and cheese.
So yeah, I'm fully won over again.
Yep.
And I was threatening to eat because we had one leftover wing, and I was threatening to eat it in bed. Because I've been known to eat barbecue in bed.
Are you trying to turn me on over here?
But
barbecue in bed.
But I ate it before I went to bed.
Yep.
And yeah, so it was great.
Yeah. So good foods this week.
Yes.
All right. Let's see. I guess we can dive into our show topic now.
Sure.
After all that detour. least favorite and most favorite Halloween candy in anticipation of Halloween, which is about a week away at the time of this recording. Let's start with some of the listener suggestions.
All right. Melissa G, her least favorite is Snickers bar. And she's like, take them all. And then her favorite of the favorites, the peanut butter thingies that are wrapped in orange and black wax paper. And to me, that answer seems like bizarro world.
I agree. I was like, how can you hate on Snickers? They're maybe not my favorite candy, but they're certainly, you know, I'd eat a Snickers.
I feel like that's one of the like more like sought after Halloween candies. Like, so, it's one of the things that you trade.
And this got me thinking, because those orange and blacks wax paper candies are kind of distinctly Halloween. And
yes.
You know, so there's not a lot of candies that I would consider like specific to Halloween itself, and that being one of them. And so I jumped on the old internets to see if I could find out a little bit more information. And I found this great article from the Insider website, 2018. And it was talking about how this city in North Carolina, High Point, North Carolina, issued a statement where they were prohibiting giving those out for Halloween candy because no one likes them. And this came down from the city of High Point, Emperor of Acceptable Candy. So it's an official title.
Oh, okay.
And then I guess what these are called are Necco Mary Jane Peanut Butter Kisses.
I wonder if they're made by the same people that make Necco wafers.
I don't know. But
which are equally as abhorrent.
I feel like calling them Mary Jane Peanut Butter Kisses is a little misleading, because that would cause some people to think that, you know, maybe there's a little something else in there. But that's neither here nor there. Turns out that this was merely a publicity stunt, according to Jolie Helton, the city's communications specialist. And she said, quote, "It's totally a joke. We would never ban something of personal preference like this. But it was a story that kind of went viral on the internet at the time." And, you know, and then people started commenting, and it inspired like some pretty heated debate among
people,
sure. Because this is a very divisive candy, as you'll see from some of these other listener suggestions. All right, without further ado, let's move on to the next one.
Okay.
Mike T, what did he say?
He said, there doesn't seem to be much candy only made for Halloween other than classics or familiars in new shapes or glow-in-the-dark colors, at least around here. That said, I enjoy a good candy corn with salted peanut mix.
Ooh, talk about divisive candy. But he's one of the only people I know that likes candy corn, though.
There are, wow. Yeah.
It doesn't have a lot of fans.
No.
Corey B said, favorite is peanut butter cups or Twix.
Mm-hmm.
Classic. Oddly enough, least favorite of those peanut butter taffies wrapped in orange and black wax paper. So we got, okay, so far we have 1-1.
Yep.
One hate, one love. Mm. Or, yeah. All right.
Okay, Joseph P. said, least favorite, Jolly Ranchers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love Jolly Ranchers, except for they get, like, I'm always afraid that I'll, like, lose a filling or break a tooth.
Yeah, well, I think they were invented by dentists that were right? looking for some extra work.
Drum up some business.
Yep. Evil creation.
Yeah, and his most favorite are the Little Mounds bars and Little York Peppermint Patties.
Okay. I can get behind that.
Sure.
Charlene J. said, most favorite, I don't know these. Russell Stover orange marshmallow pumpkins covered in chocolate.
That just sounds like a Pete covered in chocolate.
Maybe. I forgot that my friend Charlene is like really into marshmallows and would like make them for, you know, like Christmas and stuff like that, and
okay.
give them as gifts, and was like really into it. So I was like, what's with you and marshmallows? Because I think she answered a previous question with something marshmallow related. And then I was like, oh, that's right. You're the marshmallow woman.
Oh.
So it makes sense. It's all coming together. Least favorite would be everything else. So marshmallows are nothing.
Okay.
I mean, and are people really giving those away for Halloween?
Eh? Oh, maybe. You know what? They come in little foil packets.
Oh, so maybe they do.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm unfamiliar with them.
But I don't think I've ever like received one in a candy bag. But I recall seeing them on store shelves. They are like individually wrapped.
You know what my most favorite is? Anything without a razor blade. Is that too much to ask? All right. Let's move on to the next one.
Okay. Victor K said, I was raised to be thankful for what I get, so I never really put a lot of thought into what a favorite candy would be. But I consider candy corn to be a hate crime.
I'm with you on that.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our friend Mike B said, least favorite is circus peanuts. I feel like that's more of a Christmas thing or something.
No. I mean, because I remember being a kid and you'd get like the odd unwrapped circus peanut in your bag. Like, that's so gross.
He says they can pave the way to hell with those things. That's what all they're good for. His favorite, orange and black wrapped peanut butter taffy. Can't get enough of them. I think it's 2-1.
So can you get those outside of Halloween?
I don't know. I fell down that rabbit hole with the city of North Carolina banning them, and that's as far as I got in my internet research.
I bet you could order them on Amazon.
Yeah, probably.
let's see. Mimi M said, most favorite M&Ms. Ooh, one for M&Ms.
Okay.
And least are Butterfingers.
Huh. Okay.
Butterfingers are good, but those also get stuck in your teeth.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda W. said, favorites would be Reese's Pumpkins. I'm not familiar with those.
Well, it's just Reese's shape in a pumpkin.
Oh, so and it's nothing special. It's just a way for them to cash in on Halloween.
But by the way, any of the special holiday-shaped Reese's candies, Reese's peanut butter cups, are exponentially better. I don't know what it is.
Maybe they're fresher.
I don't know, but I feel like they're much better. Maybe it's just
a
psychological
thing.
Maybe it's just a psychological thing. I don't know.
And they said least favorite would be dreaded candy corn.
Yes.
another vote. Candy corn's getting no love except from Mike T. All right.
Jeremy B. Least favorite would have to be those nasty peanut butter flavored cheese.
2-2.
Choosing one favorite is hard, but I could eat a pound of Smarties.
See, I'm not down with the Smarties.
Mm. Yeah. It's like eating flavored chalk.
Yeah, that's a good way
barely
to put it.
Flavored chalk.
And then from some internet submissions said, at Shelly KVD said favorite is Reese's and least would be licorice. Black or red or just all?
Yeah. Hmm. I'm going to assume black because black licorice is evil.
Yes. And then we had one more submission.
My Love and Spoonful said favorite, Butterfinger.
Okay.
Caramel apple and popcorn ball.
Okay, who's putting caramel apples or popcorn balls in trick-or-treat bags any longer?
Well, I suppose if you're going to a party, you know, people will make those.
You know who's putting them in there? The people that put razor blades in them. That's the only people. Because, like, no parent is letting their kid eat a caramel apple that they got from a stranger.
Right.
Anymore.
You know what I think is hilarious?
Let's say they have an x-ray machine or something.
Yeah. What I think is hilarious is that, like, there are police, like police are issuing statements like, you know, the be very afraid thing, like, people are giving away THC-laced candy for Halloween. And it's like, no, that shit is expensive.
Yes.
No one is giving away their weed.
I'm not sharing my
for
cannabis.
Halloween.
And
yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not some animal. I'm not going to like anonymously
drug someone. Children. Yeah.
You know who does that? Like middle-aged white dudes at a bar.
Yeah. Yes.
That's who does that. Psychopaths. It's not some like stranger giving you candy. Oh, goodness. All right. Let's go to our picks.
Okay. Lay it on me, Balmer.
All right. Let's talk after the show. least favorite? We'll start with that. Candy corn.
Okay.
It's got to be. Yep. And then black licorice. Anything with black licorice in it. Yeah. Not a fan.
So you're not a fan of the Mike and Ike's?
Nah.
No, wait. Is it Good and Plenty's? I think Good and Plenty's are the... Mike and Ike's are the fruit flavored.
No, anything
good and,
black licorice. Good if someone plenty's. Put a little mini bottle of Jägermeister in my bag, ugh. I'd say no. little airplane
like,
bottle.
You wouldn't be like, cool, liquor. You'd be like, who wants this?
Yep. favorite? I mean, I was always partial to like Butterfingers, but I also was just partial to like any of the houses that would give out a full-size candy bar. And that's the ones where you'd go back time and time again.
Yep.
Like you'd get the full size candy bar and then you'd like take off your mask and go back there. And then you'd like put a sweatshirt over your costume and go back a third time.
Yep.
And then like, you know, if you had another costume you could throw together, like a hockey mask or something, you'd put that on and go back another time.
Okay.
Then,
you can haul your ass to the store.
Yeah,
and
I mean, that's what I would do.
Back then, like candy bars were like 35 cents.
But, you know, that was a kid.
That's a lot of work.
I didn't care. What else did I have to do? I was 10. Yeah, and then I remember one year, do you remember Pop Shop when that was around? It was like a specialty like soda shop and they had all these like kind of unique flavors like bubblegum pop and stuff.
No.
And
God, I hate the word pop.
I know you do.
Pop.
It's a Midwestern thing.
I've never called it pop.
And I remember like occasionally someone would give away like a can of soda or something or like this Pop Shop pop and that was like the jackpot.
That'll weigh down your bag.
Oh yeah, but you know that would require like repeat visits as well.
Ugh.
So I guess those were mine.
Okay.
What'd you have?
My least favorite are Smarties.
Yeah.
Like I said,
yeah.
Chalk. Yeah. And you can throw Necco wafers in there. To me, I think they're like cut from the same cloth.
They're
disgusting.
Black licorice tasting as well?
No, they're like...
I don't know if I've ever had one.
They're like Smarties, but they're bigger. They're like the size of a quarter.
Oh, yeah, I have had those. I know what you're talking about.
Candy corn, of course, and Circus peanuts. So gross.
That's a solid list.
I mean, Circus peanuts are essentially marshmallow, which I don't like.
We used to joke around, and we never did it, but I always said I was going to cook up like a big pot of chili.
Just ladle some chili in there.
And I'm just going to have like a big steaming pot of chili there. And I just, you know, they open up their bag and you just like drop a ladle of chili in there. Hey, kids. Happy Halloween. Olive keeps sniffing around my drink over there.
I know. She's going to knock it over. Mark my words.
Probably.
He's got it sitting on the floor. And then that glass is going to break. We broke a glass yesterday. It fell out of the cupboard.
We've been here 2 months. We've broken about 3 glasses already.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hard surfaces in our condo. It's it's like concrete floors throughout. And then like, you know,
typical
granite countertops. So like, if a glass goes down, it's breaking.
Yeah.
And then the one you broke yesterday fell on the counter.
Shattered.
It was like glass
everywhere.
Dust.
Everywhere.
It was dust.
Everywhere.
Just disintegrated.
Okay. So my favorites. We're all over the place. My favorites are peanut butter cups, especially the shaped ones.
Okay. Fresher is what you're saying. Or something.
I don't know
tastes
what
better.
It is. Maybe it's just like a psych. They're more special,
okay.
I feel like. Almond Joys.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about those.
And
so you prefer those over the Mounds?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I actually like the peanut butter taffies.
Okay.
And I'm a big fan of the Tootsie Rolls, but it's got to be like the bigger ones, not the little midget ones.
Okay. Did you just say midget?
They're called like midgies.
Oh, I thought you said midget.
I think I probably did.
That was very politically incorrect of you.
Well, yeah. Sorry. I mean, I call little people. I would.
Yeah.
Like, but.
But you call Tootsie Rolls midgets.
They're midgies.
Okay. Moving along.
Jesus, I really stepped in it, huh?
Oh, man. Anything else on the candy?
No.
All right. Good talk.
Let's get to the book.
We should. All right. So, you know, plant-based eating is pretty common these days. However, if you're, you know, got a family, it might be a tough sell to convince the entire family to forego meat. This book from author Jenny Rosenstrach offers a clever compromise, vegetarian dishes throughout the week, and then you can indulge in your inner carnivore on the weekends.
The way you say carnivore is really weird.
I'm sorry.
Carnivore.
It's French.
Oh, like terroir?
Yes.
Okay.
Whether your reasons for embracing plant-powered meals is environmental, ethical, financial. I was in Walmart today with my mom. Meat is expensive.
Yes, it is.
Man, she was going to get a steak, New York strips, just one in a package. And, you know, granted, this is Walmart, so they're not even like that great of steaks. $13. ribeye was like 16 to 18 mm-hmm. range just for one steak.
Well, that's why we do surf and turf like once every couple, yes. 3 months.
So, you know, I can understand even if your motivation is simply financial, like, you know.
Yeah.
Cut out the meat. Could be health related or all of the above. This book features 100 veggie focused recipes. It's not vegan, vegetarian. But it offers like a really interesting, I guess the term would be like flexitarian approach to eating. And it's a good way to maybe get your family thinking more about this and to kind of ease them into embracing a plant-based lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like a good, intriguing book for us because we kind of practice a similar diet anyway.
Yeah. Well, we were
chicken wings aside.
We were vegetarians we were both vegetarians when we met. I had been we had both been vegetarians for quite some time before we met.
But keep in mind, we were pretty young. And so, you know, our version of vegetarianism probably just consisted of eating lots of like macaroni and cheese and stuff like that.
Yeah.
A bunch of garbage.
We weren't super healthy about it.
No. As a lot of younger vegetarians are not.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Chicago, and I don't think you can legally be a vegetarian in Chicago. They'll chase you out of the town with pitchforks and a thigh bone of a cow.
Okay, sure. So I'll give a bullet point of what we made.
All right.
We did a pizza with cheddar, caramelized onion, and egg. Barley bowls with chickpeas and roasted vegetables and avocado dressing. There was a cabbage kale tofu salad with a citrusy ginger dressing. The greenest pasta, which was spaghetti with peas, broccolini, and a kale pesto. Tofu banh mi. Slivered minty sugar snap peas on a bed of ricotta. And then we did a za'atar pizza dough flatbread.
We did a lot of stuff from this book.
We sure did.
And I guess, you know, again, sign of a good cookbook when we had trouble deciding and narrowing it down.
Well, and also for this book, our grocery bill was exponentially lower.
Yes.
Because there was no meat, which is always nice.
Well, and this was shortly after we moved to Minneapolis. There's a great farmer's market here that we've kind of rediscovered. You know, we used to go there all the time when we lived here. And, you know, if you shop smartly there, you can really keep the grocery bill to a minimum. And mm-hmm. we kind of went nuts there,
yeah.
You know, and this was like the perfect book to embrace that. So let's talk about that pizza.
Okay.
This was a good one.
Yes.
Our egg cooking game on the pizza was on point mm-hmm. for this one.
Well, the recipe says, you know, use store-bought pizza dough. But we always have pizza dough in our fridge for various applications. And we use it. We use the Paul Kahan recipe.
Yep. Cooking for good times, people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if for no other reason, it's worth it to buy that cookbook just for that pizza dough recipe. I know we sound like a broken record, but
I think we've mentioned it like 50 times.
Oh my God. He owes us some money. No, we're happy to share in all honesty. But yeah, I mean, we keep that on hand all the time mm-hmm. for when flatbreads or pizzas are needed.
So I think the most time consuming thing about this was caramelizing the onions, which takes like a good 20 minutes to half an hour.
And these ones were like really, really caramelized. Oh,
they
and,
were
sweet,
like, sweet
and sticky
and mushy and yeah. delicious. And that gets put on there and it gets a little bit of sharp cheddar cheese. And then you nestle some eggs in there.
Yep.
And we always par-bake our crust first, yes. too. I don't recall if the recipe said to do that. I don't think so.
Anytime we've done eggs on pizza, which I really enjoy, mm-hmm. and we've done it several times, I feel it's really necessary because otherwise, like...
The eggs will get obliterated.
Yeah, and we just did a dish that we featured on our Instagram from the Scott Conant book, and it was kind of a riff on, like, you know, it was like these Turkish...
It's called a piedi.
Yeah, and it was like feta and spinach with an egg dropped in there, and that for some reason that yellow yolk got like really like a super ball. It was
well the
crazy.
Second one, but the thing is, I felt like the first one we did we made four of them, but we like photographed two of them. Pretty much we ended up photographing one. The first one was beautiful. And the second one, where the yolk was overcooked, I felt like the white wasn't cooked enough.
And then the yellow is like rubber.
It was like a hard boiled egg yolk.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. That was a weird phenomenon.
It must have been like in some weird spot in the oven. Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, we also got a new stove.
Yay! Finally, it only took three attempts. They tried to deliver one earlier in the week, and they opened up the box, and it was like busted up.
Yeah,
like someone got a little overzealous with the forklift or something, and smashed it up, and so they had to come out a couple of days later. But yeah, we have a brand new oven with all working burners.
Yay!
What are you gonna do with this kind of
it's a luxury
functionality?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. Let's move on to barley bowls.
Okay.
Barley bowls.
Barley bowls.
With chickpeas, roasted vegetables, and an avocado dressing. This was probably the most involved dish we made. There was a few moving parts, a few steps.
Like you had to roast the Brussels and the broccolini, and then you had to make the crispy chickpeas, and there was also, and cook the barley.
Yep.
And then there was also the salad dressing, which was lovely. It was made with avocado, olive oil, some white wine vinegar, honey, lemon juice. I think barley is one of my favorite grains.
Okay.
I'm still a little bit weird about grains, but I have to say barley and farro are my favorite grains. And I think I really like barley because it reminds me of like when I was a kid eating the Campbell's beef barley soup.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
But the barley was always mushy. Of course. I really loved it, and it's like Campbell's soup is so freaking salty.
Yes.
Which I can see why I like it, because I have a salty hand.
Yeah, this was a great dish.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that you could kind of create these little, when you're plating it, you could have these little compartments that, you know, with the little ingredients. And
it was really filling.
Yeah. It was a great dinner. Did you mention the pickled red onion? That was another step in the process.
Yes.
Too. So there was like a few things that we had to kind of prepare ahead of time, but it all came together.
And the pickled onion adds just like this nice little zing.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of adding like pickled veg to stuff.
Word.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk cabbage kale tofu salad?
With a citrusy ginger dressing.
Yeah. We went a little nuts at the farmer's market with the kale because we did a few kale dishes.
We had like three or four bunches of kale.
It just looked so good sitting there that beckoning me that I had to pick up a bunch of it. I think I always assume that we'll need more than what you actually do.
You always do. He has a habit of buying like twice as much as what we need.
And then it just wasn't necessary. So, it does suggest that you can add either shrimp or chicken to appease any holdouts in your family if they're not fully embracing the vegetarian part of this. We didn't find that necessary,
no.
But it can be done.
This has roasted tofu.
New technique.
Yeah, it was roasted in the oven. Also, if you're going to be working with tofu, like if you're going to fry it or
kitchen hack alert,
saute it, you can buy actual tofu presses, but we make our own. Put tofu on a plate with some paper towels, then we'll put a sheet pan on top of it with more, and put like, you can either use like a brick or a cast iron. Works lovely.
Small child would work great too.
Mm-hmm.
Give them something to do. Just sit on the sheet tray and squeeze out that liquid.
So aside from the roasted tofu, there was cabbage, kale, some green onion, which was all raw.
Yep.
And then There was some avocado, which gives it like that nice creamy, you have like a nice creamy textural component. And the dressing was Dijon, lime, soy, ginger, sriracha. And it used both olive and sesame oils. So it was like, it had like vaguely Asian flavors.
Yep. Well, and there was chopped peanuts and toasted sesame seeds. So like texturally, this had a lot going on as well between, you know, the crunchy kale and the nuts and seeds and then the creamy avocado. Mm-hmm. So it was pleasant to eat.
Yes. And it was also very filling. And the accompanying photo had Persian cucumbers.
Which would have been good.
Yeah.
No mention in the recipe, though.
Did we? I feel like we added cucumbers.
I think we did.
Yeah.
This is something we seem to encounter frequently in cookbooks. And I think there's just a little bit of a disconnect between the recipe itself and then like when the photos are taken. So I'm sure the recipes probably get revised over time and maybe, you know, the companion photo just was not taken again, and so a minor thing, but it's just an observation because it happens a lot.
Yeah,
in books that we work through, if you astutely study the photo, you'll sometimes notice that there's an ingredient either missing or added that is not in the recipe.
Yeah,
there you go.
All right, you get to talk about the next one since I did not eat any
greenest pasta. So that's, I think I had this for lunch one day. Yeah, so it was a basic spaghetti with some peas, broccolini, which is broccoli's adorable baby cousin, and some kale pesto. I liked the method of making some pesto from kale and almonds instead of the usual basil and pine nuts, because both those ingredients are expensive.
Mm-hmm. Especially pine nuts.
Well, in the case of basil too, it's not very like shelf stable, I guess you'd say. So, you know, you have to use it almost immediately. Mm-hmm. Otherwise it's going to go bad if it's sitting around for a while. So this was great. You know, you could make a pesto on kind of a budget using kale and almonds. And the resulting dish was very vibrant, very vivid green color, especially if you quickly blanch your peas and broccolini.
Mm-hmm.
And then
there was some butter added in at the end. Yes.
Yeah, a little bit of richness. But the resulting dish is just this very like fresh looking, vibrant bowl. I enjoyed eating it. It was great.
Well, good for you.
Really simple. Okay. Why didn't you eat any? I don't recall.
Well, because it was, that's a big lunch, pasta for lunch.
Yeah.
That's not how I roll.
I get it.
So.
I understand.
I generally will eat like shirataki noodles or something for lunch or have an apple and share.
That's not a lunch. That's a snack.
And share some like sliced deli turkey with our dog. She loves it.
You want to talk tofu banh mi?
Yes.
All right. Is banh us the plural?
No, it's banh we, you fool.
Oh, okay. Banh we. Banh we.
Banh we.
Could this meatless version rival that of pork or sometimes chicken, which I enjoyed earlier in the week, the spicy chicken? Could it? Is it possible?
Yeah, but I gotta say, I love the pork pate on. It felt a little bit bereft.
Yes.
But it was still tasty.
Let's not get crazy. But this tofu was okay.
Yeah.
It gets marinated in some solidly Asian ingredients. Mirin, sambal oleg, rice vinegar, soy sauce, and honey.
And then it gets just pan fried until it's a little crispy. And then there's the quick pickled carrot, scallion, carrot, radish, and cucumber.
Yep.
And then just for a little bit of fresh herbiness, you add some scallion and cilantro.
And then we mixed up a little sriracha mayo and smeared that on the rolls, toasted them up. Do we toast them? Yeah.
Yeah.
We toasted them up. And then
No, we did not toast them up.
Okay.
We didn't.
I don't think they're typically toasted.
No. Well, because I always usually hollow out the bread a little bit. And the book also suggests if you want a bread-free option, you can use soba noodles, and obviously don't throw any mayo in there.
Yeah. Let's talk slivered minty sugar snap peas on a bed of ricotta.
I love this one.
This was great.
It was.
I mean, I'm a big fan of ricotta.
You don't
like ricotta?
I'm kind of on the fence about it. It depends. I don't know. I'm coming around to it. It's one of my least favorite of the cheeses.
Really?
Yes.
I thought you were a fan.
No.
That's surprising.
No.
I learned something new about you all the time.
That's why, like, when we make lasagna and stuff, I don't usually use a lot of ricotta.
Okay.
Have you not been paying attention,
apparently,
sir?
Not all these years.
Jeez.
When was the last time we had lasagna, though? Because I know it's not typically your jam, because it's like, you know, it's a heavy meal.
Yeah.
It's a lot of noodles.
And I only ever do, when I make lasagna at home, I do a bottom layer filling and then a top layer.
That's more like a sandwich.
It's a pasta sandwich.
Yes.
Either that or I'll just end up like picking out like
Italians everywhere are just like,
I know,
clutching their pearls.
What is
like,
wrong with you? But this ricotta, I whipped it up a little bit. Let's see. There's pea pods that are thinly sliced and they get jazzed up with some cilantro. Well, what did we add? We added cilantro, mint, basil.
We had quite a bit of fresh herbs on hand from the previous dishes. And so we made this nice melange of herbs. And it was really good.
And a little bit of chili oil on top. And then we threw some radish in there. And we served it on a za'atar pizza dough flatbread.
Which is the next dish.
Yes.
Perfect segue.
Yes.
So the recipe suggests using store-bought pizza dough, but once again, we reached for the homemade stuff that we had in the freezer. And then, strangely, the recipe instructs you to bake this using a sheet pan, so it would be like kind of rectangular in size. The accompanying photo, though, shows a round variety.
So clearly
made using either a circular pan or probably a cast iron skillet, which is what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is like a pretty simple recipe, especially if you're using the store-bought pizza dough variety. The dough gets seasoned with garlic powder. We'll talk about that in a second. And za'atar. And we used a pretty liberal application of it. And we had some really good za'atar on hand, so mm-hmm. we didn't have to like mix any up from scratch.
And it gets brushed with a little olive oil on top.
Yep. Side note, how do you keep garlic powder or onion powder from clumping?
You put rice in it.
Okay.
Which we don't.
I'm kind of breaking up with garlic and onion powder. I'm just going to go with the granulated.
Granulated.
Stuff.
I know. Because I always end up tossing it because it's in like one
big... It's a solid
big
mass. You got to use an ice pick.
And you're like trying to shake and shake.
Yeah.
But
I don't... Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you had asked me that and so I looked it up and I'm like...
Okay. Rice. That seems like, why bother?
Well,
just get the granulated
stuff. I agree. Well, because then you have to pick out the rice.
Our house is going to be a garlic and onion powder free house from now on. It is decreed.
Well, and generally we don't use like the powder anyway. We use fresh stuff. So
the high point emperor of acceptable powders and granulated herbs has spoken.
The hype. Sure. Are you doing a little throwback to your earlier story?
It's coming full circle.
Sure.
All right.
Okay.
You want to talk about our rankings?
Let's do the most critical review first.
Strangely enough, there were no one. Well, not strangely. That sounds mean. I didn't mean it for that way.
But usually there's someone who just like.
That's true. Someone's got to be contrary.
Yeah.
But there were no 1 or 2 star reviews. There was a 3-star one. So that was the only one I found. And it says, this is from Sarah Jean. And she's 3 out of 5 stars. And it says, who is her audience? Bought the digital copy to check it out before buying it for my parents. They need to eat more veg for health, but they don't know how to build meals without meat. So this book is inaccessible. Recipes call for things like mirin and tahini and pearled barley. Fine if you live in New York, but very hard to find in rural Ohio. As a Brooklyn resident, I don't need help eating veg. So who is this book for? The introductory information laying out her meal plan is good, but the recipes are bad. And then she mentions Cookie and Kate and Love and Lemons are better. So
here's the thing. Even Walmart has like the, I'm doing air quotes now with my fingers, ethnic aisle.
Yes.
Where you can find, I'm sure all of the above things that she mentioned are in that aisle.
I would say that you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
even in rural Ohio. Although, I don't know, maybe does Walmart kind of cater to specific clientele? Because I know, like I mentioned earlier, I spent an afternoon in hell, aka at Walmart, with my mom doing some grocery shopping.
Oh, he's so nice.
I took my mom out grocery shopping. She doesn't get out of the house much anymore these days, and she's going a little stir crazy.
You're such a good son.
And she wanted to walk around Walmart. Which,
there are about 10,000 other. I'm sticking needles in my eye. Yeah, I would rather.
See, that's the thing. Is like that was like very enjoyable for her, and it was like my own personal hell.
So, you're a good son.
But they had a pretty diverse clientele at this particular Walmart, just from my unscientific observation of the people walking around, and you know the groceries were kind of reflected in that. So yeah. I was just kind of curious.
Well, and she lives in the suburbs too, so I mean it's not like she's living on a farm or anything, but you know, it's not a metropolitan hotspot. By any means.
At all.
So anyway, let's talk about our rankings.
Food photography and styling.
I gave it a 4.
All right.
Simple, and I believe it was all studio lit. Like there was no playing with shadows or hard light or anything.
Correct.
I'd say like most of it was overhead. It had a really nice, relaxed feel about it. There are like forks and food, and one thing that I really liked is that there was silver that was like tarnished, which I have a ton of as props because I'm too lazy to take a little bit of Brasso and untarnish it. I like the like patina of it. So I actually really appreciate that. There are lots of crumbs. There were some head-on shots, a couple shots of her and her dog, and
yep.
a shot of her daughter. Nothing fussy, nothing like extraordinary, but I feel like it fit the book very well.
Yeah,
it served the book fantastically.
Man. You said everything I was going to say. I also gave it a 4.
Did you peek at my notes?
I did not. Focus was on bright, vibrant colors. When your book centers on vegetables, you've got a great subject to start with for
Absolutely.
Photographing. And she did not waste that opportunity. Fresh and rustic is what I said. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of alludes to your you know, patina flatware comment, but I noticed that as well. Lots of ceramic dishes.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the bowls and plates were like, looked like custom pottery or something. It was really cool. Nice little flourish. Again, unfussy. There was lots of crumbs, lots of little spills and drips. And I love that. And then candid shots, especially of her dogs. And we're suckers for a good dog photo.
Yep.
So well done.
What was the number you gave it?
4.
Okay.
What'd you get for design and layout?
You tell me.
I gave it a 4.
Okay.
There were some interesting sections within this book. So I don't know how to describe. The book was kind of divided up into like 4 areas. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe it. And then within each one of those, they had these subsections.
Yes.
Maybe you'll be able to kind of articulate what I'm saying more, but then there were like some really unique, you know, like there was a how to assemble a small plates dinner. And so it kind of reads like a choose your own adventure kind of thing. And then there's a useful, like, frequently asked questions section that kind of answers some of the common things if someone is maybe considering a more plant-based lifestyle or going vegetarian, and just how to navigate that when you're dealing with a family. Probably one of the most annoying questions that vegans get is, where do you get your protein? And so it kind of touches on that, where, you know, here's a section on like where you can get protein.
It's called protein hits.
Yeah. And so it's like eggs, tofu, chickpeas, stuff. Obviously, we said this was not a vegan cookbook. It's vegetarian. But then there's this interesting mix and match meal chart in the back of the book. And the premise is kind of like all of the recipes within the book are based on probably about 11 different recipes. So you've got like soups, sandwiches, salads, pizzas, you know, like whatever. And then from those categories, depending on what ingredients you have on hand, you can mix and match and kind of, again, you know, choose your own adventure kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So some interesting design and layout choices.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think we spoke already about with the recipes, like there were some photos that maybe didn't match up exactly to the recipe. So I had to knock off a point for that. But otherwise, like I didn't really mind how it was laid out. I will say there was no master list of recipes. So if you like looking at the beginning of the book and they break it down by chapter and then they say like, you know, what recipes are contained, there's nothing like that in there. So if you wanted to just kind of browse the recipes, you'd have to like page through the book.
Wait, there wasn't an index? There was an index.
There's an index in the back of the book.
Yeah.
But there is not.
Oh, yeah, there's.
There was not like chapters that would kind of tell you like page by page what those chapters included.
I get what you're saying.
It just would say like soups, salads, mm-hmm. pasta. So if you're the type that wants to just look through that chapter index, there's nothing like that in here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, gave it a 4.
Okay.
What'd you have?
I gave it a 3.
Okay.
First of all, it's very, very wordy.
It is.
It's very, like wordy in, like, a food bloggy type way.
Which it should be noted is her background.
Yes.
That was kind of
so,
how she got her
I mean,
start.
I get that, but it's a bit much. And like you said, there's 4 sections that are broken into smaller sections. The chart at the end made me feel so chaotic just looking at it. I get, like, for me, when I looked at it, the only way that I could wrap my brain around it was at the top, it's like ingredient, like individual vegetables.
Right.
Which to me is like how I would use it. Like mm-hmm. go down the column of the vegetables. Mm-hmm. Like if you say I just bought a bunch of eggplants,
mm-hmm.
or I like there were beautiful eggplants at the farmer's market, you know, and then I would go down the column and see what I can do with that. But just like looking at that whole chart, just like it, I know it's supposed to be helpful,
yeah.
but like for me personally, it was too much for me.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I'm always fascinated by just how different people interpret mm-hmm. that kind of data and you know, what might be kind of clever to someone is like very confusing to someone else.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. So that's interesting.
So yeah. And, but I do like, and I appreciate that there are little, like there's this little section called, like there's a little blurb on the bottom of a page called holdout, you know, and it's mm-hmm. like you can add this or this, you know, for people who
want
some meat in there.
And you know, reading from the material at the beginning of the book, I think that's where that chart kind of ties in, because I think her intention was to really get people to expand their repertoire of cooking to include things where the vegetable is the focus instead of like meat.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, like not overthink it too much, where it's just like, you know, based on what you have on hand, you can use this chart to kind of make up your own things. And so it was kind of like, here's the recipe is kind of like a template, but from this, you should be able to kind of make up your own things. And so,
yeah
maybe it wasn't as successful, but
I appreciate that, but it just like made me so anxious.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Degree of difficulty.
What'd you get?
I gave it a 3. Well, it's, I don't know if I want to give it a 3 or a 3.5. There's a section called small plates where it's like, you know.
Mix and match.
Yes. And it's like, start with a legume and then you add a bread component and then you add a vegetable. That's 3 whole separate recipes that you are making. And I mean, if
not exactly an easy weeknight dinner.
Yes. So, and
which is supposed to be the premise of the book.
Yes. It's a lot. And I do feel like, you know, some of the recipes did have a lot of ingredients.
Yes.
And I think people looking at this would be like, you know.
Yeah.
It could very potentially scare some people off.
Sure.
I mean, for me, I guess for me personally, like I didn't find anything too difficult. No, it wasn't too difficult, but like I really would not make anything from the small plates section.
Okay.
Because that's a lot of work.
Fair.
What did you give it?
I gave it a 2.
Okay.
So I did not find the recipes to be terribly difficult to execute because there are a lot of shortcuts taken, if I can call it that. So like store-bought pizza dough, canned chickpeas. But some of the recipes, as you were alluding to, are kind of involved.
Mm-hmm.
So like the barley bowl one that we did, you know, it was like you had to cook the barley, which takes a while. Then you had to make these crispy chickpeas. Then you had to do pickled onions. Then you had to make the dressing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's practical for a lot of people for a weeknight, which is what, you know, this whole thing about the book is.
Well, and especially if you're like encouraging someone to venture into vegetarianism.
Yes.
Like that's a lot of work for something that you're not sold on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. What'd you give it for taste?
I gave it a 4.
Okay.
Overall, I really enjoyed everything. I do think that in some of the dishes, flavor was sacrificed for convenience. The flatbread came to mind. Like I think if we had made that flatbread from scratch, not using, you know, we didn't use store-bought, we used our own pizza. But like, I think like in the case of something like that, if you had used like pizza dough that you got at the store, it might not have been as good.
No, it's pizza dough.
I don't know. I felt like there were some shortcuts where you're definitely going to sacrifice some flavor if you didn't make it from scratch.
Okay. I gave it a 5. I thought that the recipes had like really great flavor components.
Yeah.
Like there is a little bit of like every flavor component, like little bit of tartness, you know, a little bit of sweet, a little bit of heat.
Yeah.
So I thought it was like all the recipes were very well rounded.
All right.
So
anything else?
Nope.
This meeting is adjourned.
Yeah. So if you enjoyed the show, please rank and review. You can follow us on social media. Our Instagram is at @we_cook_books and our Facebook is at @wecookbooks.
All right. You know what time it is?
Make me laugh.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. This one's a little cerebral, so I don't know if it's gonna.
Are you calling me dumb?
No, I just I don't know if it's gonna land as a joke.
Okay.
So let's assume someone's vegan, gluten-free, and they're really into CrossFit. How do they decide what to tell people about first?
I love it.
I got that joke from a vegan friend. She really changed when she stops eating meat. It's as if I hadn't known her before.
Before.
Right? That one's free. It's a 2-for. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Stay safe. Wear a mask.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Stay hungry.